This is Catherine Hastings, and you are listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. Happy New Year, everyone. We have a very nice show lined up tonight. We have Alisa Valles, V-A-L-L-E-S. She is the author of Orphan Fire, published by Four Way Books. And we also have Bill Vartna, Sonoma County's new poet laureate. And at the end of the show, we will have a number of Sonoma County residents sharing some of their favorite humorous poetry to help us bring in the new year with a smile, perhaps. But we are going to begin the program with Bill Vartna, Sonoma County's seventh poet laureate. Born and raised in Petaluma, Bill Vartna is the founder of Taurian Horn Press. He founded that press in 1974 and has since published 14 books, including his own collection, In Concern for Angels, which came out in 1984. He is also the publisher of 13 issues of OR Magazine. And I'm very happy to have Bill here today. Welcome, Bill Vartna.
Hi. I'm very happy to be here.
So has it sunk in yet that you are our next poet laureate of Sonoma County?
It's starting to. I was at the committee meeting last night that elected me, and so they all looked at me and smiled, so I guess I am the poet laureate. I mean, I hadn't really thought about it. I mean, Jerry DiGiorno asked me if she nominated me if I would serve, and I said, sure.
Well, congratulations. I'm very happy for you. So, Bill, you were raised in Petaluma, and I think you're the third Sonoma County poet laureate to be a Petaluma resident. There was Jerry DiGiorno, formerly, and before her, Terry Arrett. So that's a pretty good track record for Petaluma.
Well, I think we have to go a few more years before we were known more for poet laureates than chickens.
Well, you received your MA in poetics from the former New College in San Francisco. Who did you study with there?
I studied mostly with David Meltzer and Michael Palmer, mostly. I took a class. Well, I was there the last period or the last semester that Robert Duncan was there, and I took his HD class. But I wasn't actually in the class because he only took people that semester that he already knew. But I attended all the classes that he taught.
Well, that's great. He's one of my favorite poets. And haven't you also attended a number of workshops with Diane DePrima?
Yeah, I have. I wasn't able to take any courses with Diane at New College. That was another reason I had decided to go to New College, and it just didn't work out at the time that her classes required a whole year, and I went in mid-semester and then she wasn't offering her class after that semester. So I was not able to take a class from her. So when I found out that she gave classes or workshops, I asked if I could be in one, and she said yes.
Well, is there any one of those poets, whether it's one of the poets you studied with or someone else, that you feel has influenced you more than anyone else?
Well, Diane's definitely been a big influence even before I took a course from her. My thesis was on HD, and that's what I was one of the reasons I went there was because I was reading a lot of HD before I went there, and HD was saying something to me, and I didn't have the vocabulary at that time to understand what she was saying, but I was definitely getting messages, and I wanted to make those messages conscious.
So you founded the Taurian Horn Press in 1974, and you've published 14 books between then and now. Is the most recent one QR Hand, which came out a few years ago, QR Hand's book?
Yeah, Who's Really Blues by Q.R. Hand was the last book. I'm presently working on Avacha's book, and it's titled With Every Step I Take.
That's great. I didn't know you were doing that. And I just sent an email to Avacha about 2 weeks ago asking her to come up to read for Word Temple. So if she has a new book coming out, that's all the better.
It should be out this spring. That's what I'm shooting for. So, yeah, it's I've got almost the text in, but then she has to approve everything. So we'll still be making changes, but the text is in, and the she has a artist doing some drawings that that are sporadically throughout the book, and I'm just getting those in right now.
So what is it that inspired you to start Torian Horn Press?
The woman I now call my mentor, I just called her a friend until she passed away this year, Carolee Sanchez, and another friend of hers, Barbara Gravel, who ran the women's reading at the Intersection, created the Bay Area Poets Coalition, which is still existent. And in a tricky way that they had, they said they needed three people to lead, and the three people they picked were on the top of the list of when you came into the room, you had to sign your name, and I was the first one in the room, so I became one of the leaders of the coalition. And so I ran the meetings, and I suggested we have some kind of a reading or festival to proclaim our existence, which became the Summer Solstice Festival. And 300 poets read during that festival. We read on buses, we read in every park in the city, we read on street corners, and on all the regular places as well, but we read everywhere. And then I was so stoked on it, I wanted to put an anthology together of all the poets. And what ended up happening, because of the politics, people would say, well, if he's going to be in there, I'm not going, or if she's in there, I'm not going. And so I ended up with 8 poets. And that became Honeydew, an anthology, because the whole idea had to be changed because it didn't reflect the festival anymore. But I still like the anthology. So that was how Torian Horn came to be.
Well, I know that every time we have a new poet laureate, there is a project involved. So do you want to tell us what you'll be doing as Poet Laureate of Sonoma County?
What I would like to do is bronze some poems. So I'm going to see how much it costs. And I'm going to put together a committee to both be judges of which poems we're going to bronze and where. We're to find a place that some city in Sonoma County will, or town, like some poems, because I'd like to see something permanent, or, you know, as close to permanent as a poem can get, to be there so people can actually say it's part of their geography.
That's a great idea. It's like the Addison Street Project in Berkeley, right? And there's one in New York City as well. You walk up the sidewalk on the way to the main library, and there are these snippets from poems, you know, all the way up. It's great. I like that. Good. Well, you'll have to keep me posted about how that's going. Why don't we stop talking for a minute, and you can read some of your poems.
Yeah, I'm going to start with a poem called Pow Wow, and it's for Carolee Sanchez and Paula Gunn Allen, who were sisters and who took me to my first powwow. And it's a thank you. Powwow, a convergence. I bring the angels here. They were here all the time, though I didn't know, didn't recognize them as such, wanting something everyone could see, like fry bread and beans. People, nations, and ways, dancing to the drum, a center, It is not mine, not here, not in this life. I cannot dance. It would not be right. And so I watch, look in. Friends dance, claiming a who they are. Each of us reaching in our own way, out and in, to the center we create continually from what we know of being and what we don't. I created the angels to center myself, like Earth, on one level. An event growing out of other events, not necessarily occurring in time, or being the effect of any visible cause. The silence between drum beats. The movement beyond the steps. What I was becomes a symbol, and I am changing flesh, moving away from child's sorrow, wanting to lighten my heart with love, to trust the rainbow I have created. Tearing open the spaces, I dance inconspicuously, apart and a part of the silence, the movement, the dance that continues. I'll do another angel poem. My first book was called In Concern for Angels. The opening. As if someone slit the surface of an overripe earth and the juice just rose up through the rock to reveal itself. Ill River, Fortuna. You are here with friends. One who knows the area, one who carries a field guide with colored pictures of birds. You sit on the bank, on boulders extending from the tangle of branches you squeeze through to get here, a long left toward town, and a longer right slighted by the sun's glare. Over there, across the way, the river recedes from the row of trees, leaving a layered beach complete with skipping stones. In winter, when the sky is high, when the water is high, and a darker shade of green, those trees are tested. You think of the January failures that contribute to this June panorama. Suddenly, a bird bursts from the bushes, cutting the air with uneven geometry. Flurry and dash, dart. Definitely a swallow, your friend says, leafing quickly through the book. Here, this one, a barn swallow, the rust-colored breast. This amazes you not for the naming, but what is not. Trees, bushes, birds you can hear, boulders and rocks. The vision extends into the shadows of the shapes you feel coming from within, something deeper than the sense of it or any pronoun. Like calm, an immediate knowing, that feeling, angels, the synchronicity extends throughout. Molecule, subatomic particle. The long loping phrase of a great blue heron heading west. To know each and every name and to speak them in a moment. The moment unnamed, unknown, and still we try. And often we extend what we know. Always we go beyond this into the realm of angels. Their siren song, the silence presents to us. Circles in the river. What a mouthful this swallow is. How it dips, dives its beak into the water. The drops slip and slam against the surface, reuniting the river in our eye. To our heartbeats and our souls. How we are carried by this current to bend, to swell, to rush, and to lose these selves into that ocean that curls in upon itself to greet us. The angel's song permeates all, from that timeless within, moving in and out of focus, in and out of form, like those drops my swallow spills. I know nothing but this feeling, to have it broken like that row of trees, a hole in the middle where the mountain, miles away, rises up, stunning in their great green coats. How it all changes, the higher-flying heron replaced by the kingfisher looking for a meal. The river's the constant, and the river isn't as sun sparkles from the bobbing current crests, the process of choice. I wonder what my eye sees in its own completeness. This feeling remains joyous in its own. I'm going to just read a section of Variations on a Theme by Rambeau and Olson, partly because this is one of the first poems I wrote about Sonoma County. So I'm going to read section 2. Sugar pine bark boats float with mast of twig. Three-pronged needles keep clear of clean trail sweeping through forest floor. O saison, O chateau, what soul is without sun and moon? Magic, a study riddled with green photosynthesis. A picture of white blossoms blowing at noon, etc. Past Sebastopol asphalt, the road to Russian River redwoods. My memory is at home near Petaluma. I salute the crowing cock that wakes me, the shock of feathers shimmering, the light never without shadows, and yet the moment free from envy. Ah, happiness, how complacent I can be, my living energies, a continuous charge alternating on a round spinning magnet. These seizing seasons make such a comfortable fence for forest's continuous change. Even the hands of the hour of death pass by, as if in charmed flight. I'm going to read, the next three poems are going to be coming from postcards, which Ed Coletti published for me. And they were part of a group that we sent postcards to each other. And that's how it got its name. So this one's called Starting. The title sort of came with the book. Sometimes I've titled them, but mostly it came with the book. Starting from Petrarch. At midnight in winter, overcast with forgetfulness, my ship reels and rocks. Between rocks the rough sea allows me to glance, only with a gasp of terror. My soul, is it friend or foe, captains this drenched vessel. And then, a memory, my grandfather, who survived at least two shipwrecks, says to me, I told my crew, don't worry about whether you can swim, just keep your head above water. Another one about the ocean. Light Elegance for Jack Crimmins. The way a conch carries the ocean's tune. Funky shells that trumpet a human beach. A nair of digit. A bucket of so what? Always a new wave of shine. While I was doing these postcard poems, I was reading Robert Duncan's selected poems again, and I was taking a line and putting it vertically on the page and then trying to write a poem with it. And during 1 month while I was doing this, three poets that I had been featured with died. And I started using their poems to celebrate them and their work. And so this is called Poem Beginning with a Line by Reginald Lockett as its spine. And Reggie's poem or line is from Bro Radio's New Occupation. Square business profess to have a family tree. Square with all the angles, business, not a round planet that profess to spin, to keep the air circulating for those who have been born into its skin, a challenge to evolve this family of atoms into that tree of timeless beginnings overflowing its vessels. I started what I call vowel poems, and this is vowel poem number 13. Tick-tock, The white cat at the window takes a toke of air. It's kite season. Tick-tock. I took the kite kit and cut. It's low-tech, yet I still can't duplicate the parakeet I have tacked on the wall. Tick-tock. I stroke the cat's fur for solace. A cute tyke somewhere sits on a cot with a teak toy. It will tuck between its blankets. The Eternal Story. This is from my Below the Belt, which is my poem I'm doing on using the Orion myth. The eternal story can change with the balance of time and the range of place. Indeed, it is different for each of us, though its terms seem the same or not. What is true is written in the stone within us. Coming through the darkness, it can appear as stars in formation. We can read as dream-shifting images, a map of our inclinations, intimations of a shared reality that is one, capital S, self. And this was the first spine poem I wrote after my mentor and friend, Carolee Sanchez, died. From her poem, The Cry, which I published in her book, From Spirit to Matter. Chaos waves deep in the unconscious. Is reason a particle? Ego comfort? Humane like a chartered star in the Milky Way. It, this order, cannot hold, restores itself with a pulse of clarity. All is one. This body resumes itself upon the fabric of space it takes up. Natural is timeless. Order depends on telepathy of a tacit agreement we make. Things are meaning.
Well, Bill, I told you when you first walked in today that it just feels really good to know someone like I've known you for quite a while now. And here that someone is Poet Laureate of Sonoma County. I am so pleased, and I congratulate you again.
Thank you very much. I'm blown away by the whole thing.
Okay, so everyone grab your calendars right now, because Bill Vartna will be honored at a reception on Sunday, January 29th, 2012, at 3 o'clock p.m. at the Main Library on 3rd and B Streets in Santa Rosa. That is January 29th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I hope to see you there. My next guest is Elisa Vallis. She was born in Amsterdam to an American father and a Dutch mother, grew up in the United States and the Netherlands, and studied Slavic languages, literature, and history at the School of Slavonic and East European Studies in London, and later at universities in Poland, Russia, and the United States. She has worked for the BBC, the Dutch Institute of War Documentation, the Jewish Historical Institute, and La Strada International in Warsaw. She now works as an independent writer, editor, and translator in the San Francisco Bay Area. Vallis is going to be reading from her first full collection of poems, Orphan Fire, which was published by Four Way Books. Edward Hirsch calls her a gifted American poet with an unusually international sensibility. Vallis has contributed to many works of poetry and writing, including the Polish Writers on Writing, Trinity University Press, the New European Poets, Grey Wolf Press, Documentary Theater on the World Stage, Palgrave Macmillan, and served as an editor for the web journal Words Without Borders. Her poems and translations have appeared in the Iowa Review, the New Yorker, the New York Review of Books, Plowshares, Tri-Quarterly Verse, and others. She is also the editor and co-translator of Zegnev Herbert's The Collected Poems, 1956 to 1998, a New York Times Book Review Notable Book of the Year, and of Herbert's Collected Prose from Echo Press. But right now, I'm going to turn over the microphones to Elisa Vallies, who will be reading from Orphan Fire. And I'm going to let her read whatever she wants with one caveat. I really want to hear Terminal Etude again. She read this at the Word Temple Poetry Series a couple of months ago, and it was just a lovely experience. So welcome, Elisa Vallies.
Hi, it's great to be back with Catherine at Word Temple. I'm going to start by reading a couple of poems from the title sequence, Orphan Fire. Number one. Not a god's weapon of mass destruction, just a flint spark driven up a dry hillside, on Ararat, of course, let into the stables like a stray animal to share at the trough, until an intruder stealing a horse saw it and thought he could make it work for him down in the brothels of humanity. Now anyone can touch it, junkies, canteen cooks, and poets, and for them it consumes its own origins, air, eagerness, and brightness. Twice orphaned, by gods and by earth, just to give bodies of clay an hour's warmth. 2. Constant fire, passing into the created world, loses track of its source, and destroys its end, coming to know three kinds of life form: pain of landscape, pain of language, pain of love. A sea becomes a river, a cry becomes a word, a vivid thing in the air around you. 5. You wanted a pure island language, blind to the world like a tree's root, but you drew a slip of paper saying, a word like a hand that could reach and touch the face of an angry child, a dying man, and now you can't find a word in any language that would both bind a man to his own world and lead him trusting into another. There may be such a word, but how to know to whose body it's attached, from what world it's reaching out. 6. Atomic Love Poem. The night sky with its cast of stars shows the dailies for the production, free of charge, to everyone involved. The warmth left in a seat on the bus proves against all odds the raging of some inextinguishable furnace. How even the dirtiest gutter rivulet, watched by a bum on the pavement, implies the wild liberties of oceans. Written on the inner slope of a teapot, in the color of brick and dried blood, a secret tribal history of mankind. If this be so, why then, from among all the fantastic conflagrations, do I choose what claims to be you? 7. Body. Map of water and shame. Ardent junk, Congress filled with the arguments of chemicals, echo chamber for the cries of stubborn generations, all the quaint invisibles death has grown a beard on, maze and flame, factory where decay's people clock in, philosopher clown blowing a whistle at each epiphany. Washed by the rough nurse morning, wheeled into the wards of afternoons, feeds exhausted on the broth of dusk, reads the erratic cards of dreams, turns on insomnia's rack, breaks into the safe of sleep, loses its name in foreign embraces, forges a passport to a country of tenderness, gestures like a child at the thing that it wants, opaque from its own breath on the glass. 10. Leaving a house on fire, what did we take? A suitcase full of smoke and untranslatable jokes. Words on ice, tongues torn from it. Confidential papers giving off a fragrance of dry grass and salt. Inflammable sheets. A broken clock. A guidebook to the species, the fur of a nocturnal animal, some names. 12. This has a little epigraph from Paul Celan in my rather free translation. Later arrow that flew out from the soul. This is a poem by Celan. It's a line from a poem by Celan about Vincent van Gogh's last painting of crows flying over a field of wheat.
You're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. Let's return now to Elisa Vallis.
No hill, no house, nothing here to say I. To see the world, one obliterates oneself. Naked film bathing in the acid darkness. In a field, an arrowhead still draws blood. Death left its refuse, nests of human hair. Which heaven? Sight's edge, light's husk. Number 14. This poem contains a reference, or it's really addressed to an old friend of my Dutch family's, Adriaan Morian, a Dutch writer, it's very hard to describe what he was like, but he was a particular kind of aesthete, and he was a poet and a translator, and I used to translate with him. We translated a lot of American poetry into Dutch, so my address to him is really a poem that I should have dedicated to him. I wrote it to him after he died. Today I didn't bathe or dress or speak, didn't read the paper or answer letters, didn't work very much, maybe an hour, to placate the spiteful god Anonymous. A house not mine was filled with light. I walked the hallways talking to myself. A butterfly, finding its way into a room, beat its wings to shreds against the pane. I would have told you if you'd been here. You were saying that 400 angels always seem surprised at nature's cruelty, and this an advantage we had over them, a cynical knowledge that helps us endure. Today I wanted to ask you, endure as what? All day cargo boats passed on the river, gulls clipped the wide water like a ribbon. Nothing surprises us. Only beauty, a ribbon, marks the distance between us and salvation. 16. I lie under the winter, under a stone of cloud. Already the snow is being fitted to my throat, like the shirt an angel once laid out for Blake. The mice are all my company. They occasion doubt as to the sovereignty of my own mind, the idea that man is a measure of everything. The mice ate half a long white bread. Now I'll feed the rest to birds returning across the lake. I can see the folds of a child's dress, imitating wings in bold flight, without memory of a fall. Number 18 is a little poem about my grandfather on my father's side, who was an actor, who was born in the East End of London, went on the stage there, and then emigrated to America after the First World War. And he was of Spanish origin, so he carried with him several traditions, although he always claimed to be a perfect Englishman. He brings his songs from another country, and even they are borrowed. Dancing, he weeps. Dancing, he grows angry. The next journey will be brief. Dancing, he laughs. And this is the last poem from the sequence Orphan Fire. It's called Draft for a Psalm. Night sky, voyaging stars, distant space. I can't hear what you're saying. A drunk is singing in the yard. A cat chasing prey, a woman groping along a crumbling wall. I prefer a gull's scream, empty and clean, when the sea wind reaches into its throat and a boat pulls away from shore, though what is real is neither purity nor distance, but the place on the wall someone's hand wore away, a cat's eye, a drunk's sleep. Night sky, voyaging stars, distant space, guide me, instruct me, inhabit my voice. The second section of this book, my first book, is a kind of travelogue. It starts from the place where I was born and ends the last place I lived before the book came out, Warsaw. And it has a little epigraph from Emily Dickinson. What inn is this where for the night peculiar traveler comes? This is a poem dedicated to, as is the entire book, to Stenna Price, or Stenna Berger originally, a woman whose name I have from my parents as a middle name. It's called Photograph. Here are three children caught in blurred motion, playing charades on the far side of a house, where the window is nothing but a wall of white light, flowing as if from an inexhaustible source. The glare from the window makes the small bodies oblique. It looks as if some force were pulling them irresistibly out into the world on the other side of the glass, where they will go flying far off into blind space, hurled over seas and continents. From inside, shadows crowd in on them, the dark wood of a dining table, dusty plumes by a mirror, a lamp giving thick, circular light, letters propped up against a vase with purple flowers. Time-wasted things, a green ginger pot, a bird's nest found on a walk, a wooden primer with words in a foreign language, lie like objects in a tomb, accompanying the dead to their next dwelling place. On a shelf in a corner, a woman, we share a name, looks out from the back cover of a book, the air around her face filled with ghosts from a dark corner of Europe. Perhaps one night an angel will come and take me for her and grant her another life, if only the one meant for a child, a life crying out from the books she leans against, from gestures of play, from the glowing pain. This is a short poem called In the North. It's about a place in the north of Holland, very near where I grew up or spent a large part of my childhood, Westerbork, where there was a transit camp from where political prisoners and Dutch Jews were deported to camps in Germany and Poland during the Second World War. In the north, Westerbork. Winter came and went, spreading its iron grain, the earth the color of ash, trees the color of bone. In an interval between wars, spring and summer passed, color advertisements for another country. At a place where trains departed every Tuesday, a stick probes the exhausted mouth of morning. The north shaves and washes in its cold mirror. The trees claw at the doors of the earth and air. The wind throws off its white sheet and wanders, a wakeful child in a house deserted by the elders. In icy furrows, a thin wind is rubbing its face raw. On a branch, an oriole is punishing its one vowel. So now I'm going to read, on special request, a poem called Terminal Etude. I should explain that Terminal Etude is a terminal at Warsaw, Frederick Chopin Airport in Warsaw. It has terminals called Nocturne and I forget what the other one is called. There are three different ones. In any case, I started this poem waiting for a plane at this terminal. It has a little epigraph from a wonderful Polish poet, Miron Białoszewski, who I've often tried to translate in vain to my own sense. But I have one line from his poem, which is a poem for a dead lover, which it's a sublime poem. The line is the only thing I was happy with when I'd worked on the poem for a while. Not on paper, but human and bitter. We're only a little dead. A shadow broke a window and found its way to bed. Warm enough for a word, narrow enough for a widow, only a fissure in Warsaw. In the middle of Warsaw, who is also a widow, behind a broken window, she's only a little dead. I was lying in bed, too tired to read a word. Without a single word about your being dead, it's obvious to a widow, you lay down in bed and told me about Warsaw, just outside the window. Holding shards of window, you said you had a word known only to the dead. You whispered it in bed. It sounds a bit like Warsaw from the mouth of a widow. We made death a widow, more bereft than Warsaw, falling through a window in the middle of the bed, wrapped in that one word, we raised up the dead. A door leads to the dead by a fissure in the word. So now, all over Warsaw, down to the last widow, we're waiting by a window till they come back to bed. Now all Warsaw is our bed, and your word is a widow with a window on the dead. This is a poem based on an experience I had in San Francisco more than 15 years ago. Now, there used to be a school called the Rosenberg Immigrant School on Geary, and I taught there for a while English and job search skills to mostly Russian Jewish immigrants streaming into San Francisco at that time. They tended to be highly educated people who were having to apply for very lowly jobs, and I had to train them often with mock interviews and standard phrases, which I was instructed to teach them, to apply for jobs as janitors and waitresses in some cases. Immigrant school, San Francisco. One more time for the camera. This is an exciting proposition. As for salary level, I'm open. Your language is a hard one, but I'm studying every night. I have an open personality. My son will become a doctor like my husband and me. You see how much it means to us. Above all, I know what I want. I've studied the tapes closely. I stand in front of the mirror. One more time for the camera. You see how much it means. You see how much I want. You see how much I am. This is a little sequence of four poems based on Arabic, classical Arabic poems, which I made versions of with the help of a friend, Najat Goldwasser. And so this sequence is dedicated to her, called After the Arabic. 1. Abu Nuwas. I write the poetry of the dead with the hand of one still alive. Driven into this corner by fate, I hang between here and beyond. I was left nothing but my body, almost invisible, yet still near. You do not recognize me now. Not even your eyes could read these lines printed on my face. I can't be found in any syllable. But an eyelid's flicker is enough to take this pain from me forever. 2. Dialogue of Abu Nuwas and Inan. Abu Nuwas. I have seen the stars shining in morning skies as if molten gold had been poured over ice. Inan, I'd make that metaphor with a citric candle warding flies from an old man's cafe table. 3. Ibn Iyad. Look, the ripening wheat, bent low by the high winds, like squadrons of soldiers, in flight, bleeding defeat from the poppy's wounds. 4. Ibn At-Tubi. I am grateful to this sickness unto death. My fever has granted my petition. At my side you stand, inaccessible one. Welcome, disastrous short breath. And here's the shortest poem in the book. Started out being very long, and it seemed to gather itself into itself. It's called Pascal, Inventor of the Syringe. What I hate in myself, I destroy in others. What I don't have, I take away from them. Lord, fill and destroy me with one needle. This is the last poem in the last sequence of the book, Post-Homage, which is an attempt to outdo Ezra Pound. A foolish enterprise, I know. This is a poem. The sequence contains some of Sextus Propertius' poems that Pound did not touch. But the last one happens to be one he also made a version of. So it's intended as a response to it. When, only when, and when without fail, death sends its representative, fast falling naked through the mind's surface, and away from all those bosses and partners to whom we thought we were eternally bound, one tangle of darkness. The president will go on plotting against evil. Tigris and Euphrates flow at his command. The territories will swarm with special forces. The heathens will adopt our uniforms and pay tribute to our gods, to whom we thought we were eternally bound, one tangle of darkness. My funeral will not be a fancy occasion. With me, no dynasty will end. My death will leave no great hole in the fabric of being. It won't take place in a Paris hotel. The press will have nothing on file. A simple affair. Enough, more than enough, to go there, clutching a few books on my bed of flowers to provide Persephone with identification. You will follow stripped and frightened thoughts and call my name deep in the night. If it's allowed, you'll kiss my face, your pound of flesh, with its doors shut. She who is an empty cage housed a flock of wild birds. That much I would like on my stone. Death I don't have all day. You will feel some pain at the absence. That seems to be part of a deal. We miss those we love and who miss us, even when they die without a show, off camera, without appointing any successors or executors. It's no use calling on the dead. It's pure vanity. Vanity to make such demands of your own dead. And anyway, my bones, small talk, would bore you.
This is Catherine Hastings. You have been listening to Alisa Valles, V-A-L-L-E-S, reading from her collection, Orphan Fire. I'm going to end tonight's program with a number of humorous poems recorded by some local poets in Sonoma County. But first, I want to remind everyone that there will be a benefit reading for our beautiful state parks on Saturday, January 21st at 3 p.m. at Jack London State Park in Glen Ellen. It will take place in the beautiful House of Happy Walls. That Saturday, January 21st at 3 p.m. And poets will be reading from the anthology What Redwoods Know, Poems from California State Parks. So I hope to see you there. And up next, we have our humorous poetry. I'm going to fit in as many as I can over the next 10 minutes or so. And I want to thank the readers, Iris Dunkel, Jody Hoddle, Greg Randall, Tony Wilkes, and David Beckman. Here they are, not necessarily in that order.
The Irish Pig by Anonymous. 'Twas an evening in November, as I very well remember. I was strolling down the street in drunken pride. But my knees were all a flutter, so I landed in the gutter, and a pig came up and lay down by my side. Yes, I lay there in the gutter, thinking thoughts I could not utter, when a colleen passing by did softly say, "You can tell a man that boozes by the company he chooses." And then the pig got up and walked away.
Pictures in the Smoke by Dorothy Parker. Oh, gallant was the first love, and glittering and fine. The second love was water in a clear white cup. The third love was his, and the fourth was mine. And after that, I always get them all mixed up.
Engineer's Corner by Wendy Cope. Epigraph. Why isn't there an engineer's corner in Westminster Abbey? In Britain, we've always made more fuss of a ballad than a blueprint. How many school children dream of becoming great engineers? Advertisement placed in the Times by the Engineering Council. We make more fuss of ballads than of blueprints. That's why so many poets end up rich, while engineers scrape by in cheerless garrets. Who needs a bridge or dam? Who needs a ditch? Whereas the person who can write a sonnet has got it made. It's always been the way. For everybody knows that we need poems, and everybody reads them every day. Yes, life is hard if you choose engineering. You're sure to need another job as well. You'll have to plan your projects in the evenings instead of going out. It must be hell. While well-heeled poets ride around in Daimlers, you'll burn the midnight oil to earn a crust. With no hope of a statue in the Abbey, with no hope even of a modest bust. No wonder small boys dream of riding couplets and spurn the bike, the lorry, and the train. There's far too much encouragement for poets. That's why this country's going down the drain.
This poem is by Anonymous. There was a young girl of Madras who had the most beautiful ass, but not as you'd think, firm, round, and pink, but gray with long ears and eats grass.
Dear Gift Horse by Evie Shockley. Open wide, now bite down. That incident was not an accident. Don't act like I'm stupid. Do you come with a saddle? Which way to the sunset? That's the thing about possibility. It's dark in here. You can't judge an R&B song by its covers, colors. Dolores is blue. Why must she give up her security blanket? She's had it since she was born. My, what sharp teeth you have. All the better.
A Limerick by Anonymous. There was an old man from Darjeeling who boarded a bus bound for Ealing. He saw on the door, "Please don't spit on the floor." So he stood up and spat on the ceiling.
Oil That Glitters by Felicia Lamport. Each sudden renewal of access to fuel leaves everyone sunny and bright. Although frequently burned, we don't seem to have learned that the plight will return overnight. But doubtless the crisis will end when the price is jacked to a new record height.
As Sweet by Wendy Cope. It's all because we're so alike, twin souls we two. We smile at the expression, yes, and know it's true. I told the shrink he gave our love a different name, but he can call it what he likes, it's still the same. I long to see you, hear your voice, my narcissistic object choice.
Variations on a Theme by William Carlos Williams. The poem by Kenneth Koch. I chopped down the house that you had been saving to live in next summer. I am sorry, but it was morning, and I had nothing to do, and its wooden beams were so inviting. We laughed at the hollyhocks together, and then I sprayed them with lye. Forgive me, I simply do not know what I am doing. I gave away the money that you had been saving to live on for the next 10 years. The man who asked for it was shabby, and the firm March wind on the porch was so juicy and cold. Last evening we went dancing, and I broke your leg. Forgive me, I was clumsy, and I wanted you here in the wards where I am the doctor.
Note Passed to Superman by Lucille Clifton. Sweet Jesus, Superman, if I had seen you dressed in your blue suit, I would have known you. Maybe that choir boy Clark can stand around listening to stories, but not you. Not with Metropolis to save, and every crook in town filthy with kryptonite. Lord, Man of Steel, I understand the cape, the leggings, the whole ball of wax. You can trust me. There is no planet stranger than the one I'm from.
Take Heart, Illiterates, an Epigram by Justin Richardson. For years, a secret shame destroyed my peace. I'd not read Eliot, Auden, or MacNeice. But now I think a thought that brings me hope. Neither had Chaucer, Shakespeare, Milton, or Pope.
A poem by E.E. Cummings. A politician is an arse upon which everyone has sat, except a man.
Loss by Wendy Cope. The day he moved out was terrible. That evening she went through hell. His absence wasn't a problem, but the corkscrew had gone as well.
The last poem will be read by C.J. Rahill and myself. This is Ode to Gaiety by the late James Broughton.
Go, gloom, begone, glum and grim, off with draught, drear, and grumble. It's time, it's past time, to come undone and come out laughing, time to wrap killjoys in wet blankets and feed them to the sourpusses.
Come, frisky pals, come forth, wily wags, loosen your screws and get off your rocker, untie the straight lacer, tie up the smarty pants, tickle the crosspatch with Josh and Guffaw, share quips and pranks with every victim of grouch, pomposity, or blah.
Woe to the bozo who says no to tee-hee, ho-ho, and ha-ha. Boo to the clean-cut klutz who wipes the smile off his face. Without gaiety, freedom is a chastity belt. Without gaiety, life is a wooden kimono.
Come, cheerful chums, cut up and carry on. Crack your pots and split your sides. Boggle the belly acre, convulse the worry wart, pratfall the prissy poos and the fuddy duds. Take drollery to heart or end up a deadhead at the guillotine of the mindless.
Be wise and go merry round, whatever you cherish, what you love to enjoy, what you live to exert. And when the high spirits call your number up, count on merriment all the way to the countdown. Long live hilarity, euphoria, and flumadiddle.
Long live gaiety for the laity.
And that's a wrap, everybody. Happy New Year. One more calendar item before we sign off tonight. On Saturday, February 11th at 7 p.m., the Word Temple Poetry Series at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts welcomes Tony Morosevich, author of The Takeaway Bin, Marjorie Stein, author of An Atlas of Lost Causes, and Sonoma County poet Ed Frankel. That's Saturday, February 11th, 7 p.m., at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts. Thanks for listening tonight. If you have any comments or questions, you can contact me at khastings@wordtemple.com.